Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Basketball is, it's a huge part for sure. Don't get me wrong, but it's only a part of your college experience. You know, right. You want to go somewhere where you can be successful socially, academically, a place that's going to set you up for success after you're done playing, after the ball stops bouncing.
Welcome to 94 and More, a podcast presented by Bristol Studio. I'm Jake Fenster, and I'm joined by my co-host, Vic Law.
What's up, mate?
Today, our guest is Duncan Robinson. Duncan, thanks for joining the show.
Of course, man. Appreciate you guys having me on. Happy we're able to find a time to do this.
Yeah, man. It was quite a struggle, but we got it to happen. How has everything been for you this season? I know you guys you're starting the second half tonight. Can you kind of take us through what this has been like for you?
Yeah, you know, it's been a super interesting year, you know, just between the new protocols, you know, the no fans and everything in between. So we've had guys in and out of the lineup pretty much all year. So we've definitely faced some adversity from that standpoint. We've had stretches where we played really well, had stretches where we've played terribly. So, you know, all in all, those, it was nice to finish off the second half right at 500. We're kind of viewing it right now as a clean slate, you know, heading into the second half, and hopefully we can, you know, gain some momentum and really start to improve.
How tough have those restrictions been? I know you've only been in the NBA. I guess this is your second season, like, as an NBA full-time
player. Yeah, third year removed from college. First year was on a two-way, so spent a little bit of time in both places. And yeah, this is now my second year.
And last year was strange as well because everything got shut down and you went into the bubble. So I guess you don't really have that normal, traditional, like, full NBA season of just, like, normal life and kind of, you know, navigating what that's like yet under your belt.
Yeah, it's you know, this is my third year removed from college, like I said, and I've yet to have, like you said, a normal season. My first year, you know, being back and forth from Sioux Falls and Miami was certainly a unique experience. And then last year I thought it was going to be normal, and as we all know, that quickly changed. So and then this year, you know, has just been kind of somewhat crazy. So at this point, it's just kind of what I'm used to. You know, when I do finally have a normal, quote unquote, normal season, that'll be my first. So we'll see.
Duncan, speaking of crazy, man, you know, life as we know it has been crazy. Things haven't been normal for quite some time, but just tell us a little bit about your story. I mean, your story itself is crazy. Going from a smaller school to then getting to Michigan to then kind of going through the back door of the NBA and, you know, getting your foot in the door. Just tell some of the listeners about your story.
Yeah, for sure. I'm from small town, New Hampshire. You know, basically not quite middle of nowhere, but certainly not a hotbed for basketball. That's for damn sure. I grew really late. You know, I was 5'6" as a freshman. I didn't really have much of a high school career. You know, I remember my junior year, like, not checking into games. So, Vic, you and I have very different high school careers. I will say that what you were doing over at St. Rita was looking a lot different than what I was doing, you know, at Governor's in Massachusetts. So I ultimately ended up, having the opportunity to play at Williams College, which is a small Division III school in Western Massachusetts.
All right. Shout out Mike Greenman.
Shout out Mike Greenman, of course. that was a great experience for me, man. I loved it there. I wanted to stay there. I had a lot of friends. I enjoyed my basketball experience, had a great relationship with the coach, and he ultimately took a Division I job. You know, we had a really good year. We lost in the national championship, and he was fortunate enough to move on to Marist. And that kind of opened up the door for some potential opportunities. At that point, I certainly didn't think that, you know, Michigan or anything high major was on the table, or even Division I, truthfully. Like I thought maybe some Ivy League schools, maybe, or some Patriot League schools would maybe be interested, but I was pretty surprised when Michigan came around. And when I got on campus and for some reason Coach Beilein offered me a scholarship, it was just something I couldn't turn down. So I spent 4 years in Michigan, played three, sat out one. And then, like you said, just, you know, took another opportunity. I played in the summer league with the Heat and was fortunate enough to make some shots and get a two-way contract that summer, and just tried to make the most of those opportunities and parlay it into something more. And it's just kind of been a whirlwind, certainly appreciative of all the stops that I've made along the way. Certainly learned a lot along my journey.
I want to take you back to something you said. You talked about when you were in high school as a freshman, you know, you were, I think, 5'7", and you played point guard. Yeah. I read that you would try to make 1,600 shots per week. Why that number? And what would happen if you didn't hit that goal, right? Because you had that work ethic. So you were obviously building towards something. So can you kind of walk us through that?
I mean, the number was pretty arbitrary. It's funny how, like, certain stories and headlines.
Yeah.
Like,
I
had a stretch a year or so where I had like a shooting journal that I would, you know, write in and make sure I was getting my makes and my takes every week. You know, people ask me that like all the time of how many shots you need to make a week. And I think there's times where, you know, it's really good to just have that like insane volume where you're really developing that muscle memory. I think that's super important. But now, you know, it's like people ask me today, like, how many shots do you make a week? And it's changed now, you know, it's had to. And once again, off season and in season looks very different, but you know, the 1600 number was pretty arbitrary. I think at that point it was just more about holding myself accountable to like maintaining consistency. So I think that, you know, anytime you know, you're able to like put numbers and put like a visual physical goal to something, I think it just holds yourself more accountable. That and also having the opportunity to like go after a goal with somebody else. I think having somebody that's kind of on your same mission, just naturally, you're gonna push each other and hold each other accountable to what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah. So when you were in high school, right? So you were clearly pushing yourself, working on the volume, trying to become a better player, a better shooter. Was college something that was on your mind throughout all high school, that you wanted to pursue basketball at the next level, or was that something that you started to realize as you got later into high school, maybe your senior year, and you were like, oh, actually, this is something I can do.
Yeah, I mean, I always loved the game, and I love to play, and I just love to be in the gym and work out. You know, in many ways, I was kind of like the only time that I felt like I was like really able to be myself and just kind of like enjoy my surroundings. So I always wanted to play in college for sure. You know, up until my senior year, I certainly didn't have the resume to do so. But you know, I was hopeful, and my main goal for basketball was really to use it as a vehicle to get me into a school that without basketball, I wouldn't be able to get into academically. That was definitely a priority of mine. I wanted to go to a really good academic school and set myself up for the future, you know, with maybe a chance to play like professionally overseas at some point. That was kind of the goal. But it's funny. Like, I remember after my junior year having a conversation with our AD saying like, I want to start filming our high school games, because we didn't have film. Like, it was crazy. I was operating like a totally different world. We didn't have film. And I was like, I want to film our high school games because I want to like be able to send film to coaches. And she kind of like gave me a look like, you don't actually think you're going to be able to play in college, right? And at that point I was like, damn, all right. I mean, I do, maybe I'm like delusional. But, you know, it's funny to look back on like little instances and moments like that. And, particularly like looking back and think of how much my perspective has changed over stuff like that. So, you know, there's obviously, you know, it's kind of the cliche of like, there's always going to be people that don't see what you see or are going to try to like hate on your vision or grind or what have you. But it is interesting to look back and just think about those little moments.
How, man, you talk about it, you couldn't even get film. How in a small town like that, small school, how big were your dreams, man? Like, how did you actually get down that path and then be able to put the work and the grind behind it to say, no, fuck this. Like, I'm going to do it. You know what I mean? Because a lot of people don't have that drive to be able to jump over all those hoops and still make it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for me, something important that I've learned in my journey is to just be very present where you are, not try to, like, forecast success. Obviously, you know, I had the goal of, like any kid, like, right, like playing professional basketball, playing in the NBA, whatever. But it's not like I was waking up every morning and going to the gym with like, I'm going to play in the NBA. Like, this is what I'm working for. It was more so like, let me just get on the floor in high school. You know what I mean? Like, let me impact winning at this level. Let me turn my, you know, 10, 15 minutes into 20, 25, you know, let me turn my 6 points a game into 10 or what have you. You know what I mean? Like, to the point where you just start to like stack little goals and knock them off. You know, and then as you start to knock them off, you start to develop that kind of resolve and the confidence of like, all right, like now we're working with something. And then you start to experience a little bit of success. And of course, you know, it's not linear, right? Like you're going to have successes, you're going to have setbacks and everything in between. So, you know, as you experience the success and as you kind of start to chip away, understanding that, yes, I'm like, I'm waking up every day and checking the box and making sure I'm getting my work done. But like, I'm also playing the long game here. You know what I mean? Like nothing's going to change day to day, maybe even week to week or month to month. But if I just continue to work, continue to handle my business, that over long stretches, right? Like over a year, 2 years, 3 years, I'll have something to show for it.
And it doesn't hurt to grow from 5'7" to 6'8".
Yes. A lot of things. A lot of things outside of my control went my way as well. It's not.
That's pretty crazy. Did you know, were you expecting to be that tall? Like, were you expecting that jump, or did that just kind of come out like, oh, this is kind of weird. Let's keep going with it.
I was expecting to grow from 5'6", 5'7", for sure. I would have expected like 6'3", you know, 6'4", maybe.
That's where I stopped.
Yeah. I have,
that's why I'm not.
I have a little,
who are you guys?
In my family, so I was optimistic, but nobody's close to 6'8", or, you know, even 6'5", for that matter. So that's why I thought I would end up like 6'3", 6'4".
Is that a weird, I mean, maybe this is a silly question, but you guys would know better than me, but is that a weird adjustment to make, right? Like, to, because your game is more kind of, you're a shooter. I'm not sure exactly what it was in high school, if you were handling the ball a lot, but is that a weird adjustment to then be that tall? Like, were people trying to put you in the post? Were you trying to work on your post game more? Were you kind of confused, or did you know your identity and the height was just, all right, well, it's just the extra thing I have now?
The adjustment was really, you know, myself physically. Like, I had to grow into the fact that I was that tall. And like, for a large stretch of time, like it hadn't like registered mentally that I was now like, you know, as a high schooler, like 6'4", which is pretty big in high school, 6'4", 6'5". There were some awkward years, man, where like I felt like I was slow as shit. Like, I couldn't run. I was like kind of uncoordinated. Like, it was just a struggle. And then it started to kind of come together, you know, like late into my senior year, and then my freshman year, just kind of like that little span right there. I started to get comfortable with my height and my length and start to realize like how to be effective at that height and length. And you know, it's like anything, takes time. You know what I mean? Like it's never going to be overnight.
True. Can you walk us through, so after you grew that, you were that tall, and that was what, after your senior year of high school?
Yeah that was so,
during that, like, you were transitioning to a prep school, was
yeah,
it in that
I
time?
Did I did a one yeah I did a 1 year I did 5 years of high school, 5 years of college. Call it the 10-year plan. You know, I might trademark that, but I took my time with it.
You didn't play in the MSAC, did you? Is that that? Is that Nepsack?
Nepsack. Yeah, Nepsack. Yeah.
Nepsack. What is the? Yeah. That's the league.
New England Prep School Athletic Conference. You know, in the Northeast, a lot of people don't really understand what like prep school or boarding school really is. You know, across the country, but in the Northeast, it's really prominent. You know, if you have aspirations of playing athletics, but really particularly basketball at a high level, you know, pretty much all the players end up going there.
So how did that help you in the recruiting process, right? So you did an extra year there to kind of get some more eyeballs, to get some more tape. And then how did that contribute to your recruiting process for college?
Oh, it was huge, man. You know, looking back, that was one of the most pivotal years for me for sure. Just because, you know, it felt like, I don't want to say that I was like cheated out of a year of high school because I really wasn't that good, but like, I felt like I should have been playing as a junior. And I wasn't really. So, you know, doing a fifth year basically just gave me another year of high school basketball. And I ended up in a really good situation with a really good coach who really had a good feel for my situation and where I could ultimately go on and be successful. So it was huge just for the career trajectory and, you know, helped me grow up as well. You know, when I stepped on campus and in college, I felt like I was kind of a step ahead of my peers and that I'd already, you know, basically been, it's like a mini college experience really, just with a whole lot more rules, but it was a higher level of basketball. And, it just allowed me to step on campus at Williams and just feel a whole lot more comfortable. And that was the other thing that, you know, the reason why I really wanted to go to Williams is because I didn't want to wait around for a school that was like lightly recruiting me to change their mind. You know, I wanted to go somewhere where I was wanted and I was prioritized and I was going to go and I was going to play and have an experience. Like I'd already sat on the bench and in high school enough, you know what I mean? Like I was trying to go somewhere to play.
Cause I mentor some kids in Chicago, kind of helping them with college stuff and just like their mentality of basketball. Can you tell us about your experience at Williams and just that dynamic of Williams is Division II, right?
Division three.
So even like going, like not just having that, cause you know, some kids in basketball are like, it's D1 or bust. Like if I'm not Division I, I'm not good enough. You know, I can't enjoy college. Can you tell us about your experience at Williams and how that made you a better basketball player and a better person in general?
For sure. You know, I think that, you know, different people want different things. You know, I'll just speak for, you know, myself and my own experience. But, you know, for me, it was, I really wanted to prioritize fit. You know, I wanted to go somewhere, like I kind of alluded to, like I wanted to go somewhere where I felt like I would first off have success in the court. And I think that, you know, recruiting wise, I was prioritized. So I felt like it was a good fit from that standpoint. Like that had been made clear to me that, you know, my skill set was going to be valued. You know, what I was bringing to the table was valued. So that was really important to me, but also like, you know, there's definitely some, you got to check your ego of like, I remember, cause I committed to play at Williams before I played a game at Phillips Exeter, my prep school year, which is kind of unheard of. Usually guys wait around, but like I said, I knew what I wanted. So I just decided to go. But there's definitely some of that checking the ego of like, you know, you might play against some kid who's committed to play somewhere like some Division I school or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I would maybe feel like I was better than him. But at the end of the day, like I'm running my own race, right? Like that's kind of the mental stability that you, I think is important of understanding, like, look, this kid might be perceived to be getting these offers or he might be going here or what have you. But instead like go somewhere where it makes sense for you. You can really have success basketball wise, of course, but just in all facets, you know what I mean? Like basketball is, it's a huge part for sure. Don't get me wrong, but it's only a part of your college experience. You know, you want to go somewhere where you can be successful socially, academically, a place that's going to set you up for success after you're done playing, after the ball stops bouncing. So that's what I felt like I really had in Williams. And that's why, you know, in the recruiting process, it became really clear that it was a great option for me. And, but there was definitely some of that, like, the competitive side of me of being like, man, I should wait for, you know, this Division I school or whatever.
Right.
I'm certainly happy that I didn't, because I wouldn't have ended up where I did or where I am today if I had gone to like, if I had waited for like a Columbia or a Brown. Just because this was the only path that was going to be, I was going to be able to get to where I am.
Yeah. What you're saying about fit, I think, is really important. And it's such a important message to spread, because there are people who get so stuck in a mindset and they're like, all right, I got to go to the NBA. So this is my route. This is the only route. And I think in that mindset, you overlook maybe what's best for you, right? Like you're saying, this route that you went was very unconventional. Very few people have done what you did. And I think, but what you're saying the whole time was you constantly were paying attention to, hey, I just need to get a little bit better. I need to just execute at a higher level and keep building off that. And if I stay true to that, I'll get where I want to go. And I think that's just a really important message to continue to echo. But can you talk us through, after that first year, what happened that led you to transferring to Michigan?
Yeah, I mean, I was set on staying at Williams. You know, I had a great experience there, and we had just lost in the national championship. So my goal was to get back and win one, if not two, and, you know, hopefully stack some personal accolades as well. You know, be the all-time leading scorer in school history. Like there were a bunch of goals that I had, and I was excited to go after. It really was not until like middle of the summer when my coach at the time, Mike Maker, took a Division I job and left. And, you know, I felt a ton of loyalty to him. I definitely felt some loyalty to my teammates and the school, but a lot of my loyalty I felt was to him, and that he really recruited me and gave me a incredible opportunity. So when he left, it just kind of opened a door. We had this weird stretch for about a month. We didn't have a coach. So this was like, trying to think, like late June, a lot of July. And I remember hearing from my high school coach, my prep school coach, and he was saying, you know, like, I don't necessarily think you should transfer, but, you know, if you wanted to, people have been reaching out and there have been some calls and whatnot. And I'm thinking like, all right, maybe like some Division II schools or maybe some, you know, low level Division I schools or whatever. And I'm like, you know what? Nah, like I think I'm good. You know, I think at the time it was like, I was thinking like, would I leave Williams for Holy Cross or, you know, or Brown or something like that? And I'm like, maybe, but like, even then, like, it's not really worth it. And then it just kind of started picking up traction. And, you know, I remember Davidson calling and I was like, damn, Davidson, Steph Curry, like they've sent guys to the NBA. Like, this is crazy. And then from there, it just got nuts. Like Iowa State, Michigan, BC, Creighton, you know, just like all these different places that, which was weird, like a year and a half ago, wouldn't even be in the same gym as me. You know what I mean? Like they didn't have anything, any sort of interest in me. So part of it was like, kind of like what changed. But then the other part of it was like, man, this is really cool. This is a totally different recruiting experience than I've ever had before. So I took a couple of visits, and, you know, when I got on campus at Michigan, you know, my big concern was like, once again, I didn't want to go and I didn't want to sit on the bench, you know, as cool as it would be to play in the Big Ten or whatever. Like I love playing like that. That's what I wanted to do. So when I stepped on campus at Michigan, it became pretty clear. And I'll give a ton of credit to Coach Beilein, is like, he was like, no, like we really see you having a serious role here. So that's all it took. I mean, the opportunity to have a role in, you know, a chance to compete for Big Ten championships and national championships, it was like, all right, like, where do I sign up? So I committed on my visit level. And it was just like, it was hard to turn down at that point.
How easy was it for you to transition into Michigan, you know, bigger school, ton of people, you know, guys coming from much different backgrounds? I mean, Jake and I have both heard the Mo Wagner beer story when you were the host. what are some good ways that the guys kind of accepted you in and the coaching staff kind of, you know, allowed you to feel comfortable?
Yeah, it was a challenge, man. You know, I sat out my first year, which I think helped a ton. I think that was the ultimate blessing, just in that I just don't think I would have been ready to play right away. You know, sitting out that year allowed me to really get ready physically, and also just practice every day and experience some success. I will say, like, there's no substitute for actually like having game success, right? And like, I felt like I could contribute and I was good enough to help, you know, when I first stepped on campus. But, you know, there's always that doubt that creeps in the back of your minds. I remember early on, you know, my first couple of months and even like deeper into that first year of not playing, thinking that I just made like a terrible mistake. Like, there's no way I'm going to get on the floor here. I remember playing like one-on-one, like King of the Hill or whatever, King of the Court, mm-hmm. with Karis and Karis LeVert and Derek Walton. And I looked like a traffic cone, dude. I couldn't stop them. I couldn't score on them. Like, I couldn't do anything. And, you know, they won every spot and I like hardly scored. And I was just thinking like, man, this is bad, dude. Like I'm just not good enough. So there were a lot of moments like that. But you know, once again, like it's just, you know, never too high, never too low. I did really enjoy Michigan from like a, just like a college experience standpoint. But, you know, with that being said, like there's always that thing in the back of your mind where it's like, you know, basketball is the main thing that drives your college experience if you're a college athlete, honestly, just because it's like, you know, it's what you think about, it's what you put all your time into. So
yeah,
there was always that, like, if this doesn't work out the way that I wanted to, you know, you're going to be looked at as, you know, he couldn't get it done, he failed, blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah.
So there's always that, which is real, but I just tried to, you know, focus on what I can control, which is, you know, handling my business, you know, getting in the gym, you know, checking all those boxes and, you know, just seeing where the chips fall after that.
What was it like for you? You just kind of alluded to it, but with your teammates being kind of even more talented than maybe some of the players you were around in the past, what was it like adjusting to the experience of Big Ten basketball, right? Playing out there with some of these amazing guys who were recruited at young ages and they're just touted as the next prospects, you know, like a Vic Law, like those types of guys.
Yeah, no, that's real. You know, it was my, particularly early on, like it was a lot of breaking down this like fear of that I'm not good enough. And you know, the biggest jump is like physically and athletically, you know, the Big Ten is a physical conference for sure. You know, I felt like I was definitely skilled enough and had some ability to like be impactful, but there was always just that concern of like, am I just going to get like bullied and punked? But that's what that first year sitting out really helped with is, you know, I think I put on like 10, 15 pounds and became a little bit more athletic and, you know, just started to like build some confidence in that area. But it was cool, man. Honestly, like, you know, it was just a year full of firsts, like, oh, my first national TV game, my first, you know, conference game, my first time playing against, you know, whatever, Michigan State or Northwestern, like all these teams that I would grew, you know, you grow up watching, you know, big time college basketball. So it was just a cool experience. And, you know, you try to walk that line of like, you know, this is really cool and this is awesome, but also being like, nah, I belong, like I'm good enough to be here.
I also want to say, before you even say anything,
no,
when you're talking about first at Northwestern Michigan, I just feel like every time we played you guys, right, like it was always shit. Like it was a double overtime game.
Right, yeah, always.
We played you guys Indy, and you, like, Zach made a three. We come, or like a pull-up. We come down and score. You make a buzzer beater. I mean, we had the full court layup. Like it was only you guys. Like whenever we play you guys, it was always some kind of – wild ending.
Every
and I
time.
Feel like
yeah,
and I feel time. Like that's like whenever I think back on like some of my favorite college memories, it was like the Michigan games are definitely some of my favorite.
Yeah, no, we had some great battles, man. For like you said, for whatever reason, it didn't really matter like if one of us was, you know, as a team like trending and playing well or the other one was playing poorly, like it didn't matter. Like it was always gonna come down to the wire. And I think like when it was all said and done, there, you know, in terms of like us playing against each other, I think it was right there around like 500, you know, I know you got us a couple of times. I know we got you a couple of times, but it's fun, man. Just like looking back and memories like that are fun to look back on for sure.
Absolutely.
I wanted to ask if there was like a moment or maybe a string of moments where you started to feel that you belonged at Michigan and in the Big Ten playing out there on that court.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely moments in my first year where, you know, I'd have success in practice or whatever. But the real one started to come when I, you know, the real bullets were really flying in real games. And I think, you know, my first game, you know, I played like 15 minutes and I was like 0-1 from the floor. And I was thinking like, oh, man, like I got to start to figure some things out. Or, you know, at this point early in the year, they're figuring out rotations and who's going to play and who's not, and it's all kind of like arbitrary. Obviously you have like your kind of starters or whatever, and then from there, you know, at that point I wasn't starting. And the second game of the year we played Elon, and I got some open shots early. I made some shots. I ended up going like 6 of 6 from three, and you know what, like whatever. We ended up winning big, and that was like, at least at that point, I had kind of established that amongst everybody that like, all right, he's at least worthy of like having a role, you know, like he's somebody that can like get hot and really help us if, you know, offense is struggling. So that was a huge turning point. And then from there, it just became like, all right, like, can you do it in bigger games? And I remember the Big Ten ACC challenge. We went down to NC State, and, you know, at this point, I think we'd already dropped a game. So we're like 3-1 or something like that, or 4-1. And we ended up beating NC State on the road, who ended up really not being that good that year, but still, like, you know, NC State, that's a big,
yeah,
big time basketball. And, you know, I played well and made some shots. And from there, it was like, that was a big confidence builder as well. And, you know, it just compounds, you know, like little stuff here and there, but there's definitely, looking back, there's little moments of inflection that were definitely turning points for sure.
I guess even bigger. So not just college, but going on from high school on, like, what point in your career did you know, like, you could be special, or like you had what it took to do everything that, you know, everyone sees, right? Like, cause I think every player has that, like, maybe not defining moment, but there's that, like, something clicks where you're like, I belong. Like, you know, I am as good as I think I am, or, you know, like, I can be so much better. Like, what was that moment for you?
You know, for me, it's really been, you know, like gaining the confidence and the resolve, like at each individual level, right? Like, there wasn't a point in my Michigan career where I was like, oh yeah, I'm good enough to play in the NBA. Like, it was, it was never that. It was more so like, all right, I'm starting to establish myself as like a solid, you know, player in the Big Ten. Then I just got to parlay that into an opportunity, right?
You're right.
A summer league chance, whatever it may be. And then summer league, you know, once I started making some shots in summer league and realizing that like the game is very different at that level, you know, different things are prioritized, you know, structurally, you know, spatially, everything is just kind of, it's just very different from college, you know,
right,
as I know, you know. But then at that point it was like, all right, like this, I was kind of being seen in a different mold. You know, people kind of thought that they knew who I was as a player just because, you know, as Michigan, we played a lot on TV and the rap was kind of out on who I was. But that was an opportunity to be seen in a new light, you know, playing summer league. And then even from there, like having some success in summer league, or even like having success in the G League, it was never like, oh, you know, that this means I'm an NBA player. In my mind, I felt like I was deserving of an opportunity.
Right.
And I had an opportunity that I can prove it. But, you know, once again, it was going to take the success, you know, or making shots, you know, in an NBA jersey to really, really like kind of turn that tide. And that didn't happen until really last year.
Right.
Just early on in the season last year, we had some guys out with injuries or just kind of weird things. And I had the chance to play some minutes early on and, you know, made some shots and just kind of turned, right, you know, 15, 20 minutes into 20, 25 and, you know, just tried to continue to run with it.
Now about your ascension into the NBA and just playing in the G League, I think a lot of people don't understand like the grind that the G League is, especially being a two-way player, always have to go up and down. I mean, you were in Sioux Falls going back and forth between Miami. How was that?
I was going to say, man, you had a 45-minute drive, man. I had two flights. So,
wow.
Yeah. yeah, you know what, man? I actually love my – it's easy to say just looking back, but, like, I really enjoyed my two-way experience just because, you know, it allowed me when I was with the Heat to, you know, I was very rarely in the rotation. I think I played like 15 games or something, but you know, when I was with the Heat, I was able to really observe and learn about what it was going to take to get on the floor this level and start to like familiarize myself with concepts and start to really understand some things. And then, you know, that was invaluable. I was in the locker room with guys like Dwayne Wade, Udonis Haslem, guys that had, you know, success at the highest level in this league. And then, you know, I could couple that and turn around and go play in Sioux Falls. And, you know, I was going to be featured, you know, I was going to take, you know, 12 to 15 shots a game, have the opportunity to make mistakes and still stay on the floor and play through those and showcase my ability of like, I'm not this kid that averaged 8 points a game as a senior at Michigan. You know what I mean? Like I have more to me than just that. And that was incredibly valuable too. And like you said, just understanding, like, G League is brutal, man. It's there's a ton of talent, and people are just like, everyone's coming for everyone. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's
very cutthroat down there.
Yeah, it's very, very cutthroat. And I think that really like developed me mentally in a way, in that it's just like you always got to be looking over your shoulder and right. Protect what's yours, like protect your dream, protect your journey. So I think that helped a lot too. So I think the G League experience is so much of it is based off a situation. If you're in a good situation, yeah. I think it's a really good opportunity, but if you're not, it can be, you know, totally different.
Right.
And I want to take it back just a little bit, and I have a funny story that goes along with this. But so when you graduated college and you came out, you were before the draft, you had some pre-draft workouts with some teams. And I think you were in LA for a workout with the Lakers.
Yeah.
There's this restaurant called Fresh Corn Grill.
Oh, that's my spot.
Yeah, me and my friends have gone there since it was a smaller restaurant, like down the street since high school, middle school. I have one really good friend who went to Michigan. And I would go visit him all the time. And his name's Artie. Vic knows Artie very well, very outgoing guy. And when I was at Michigan, people would always tell me that I looked like you. They'd always be like, you look like Duncan. And we were at Skeeps one night and you were there. And Artie was going crazy. But, you know, I'm not the type of person to make a scene or anything. So we're at Fresh Corn Grill. I think it was the emptiest it's ever been. I was waiting for Artie and you were there. There were like five people there. And it was me and you. Not that you would know, but Artie saw me and started freaking out, like laughing, making a whole scene in the restaurant. And I was just like, put my head down, like, no, no. And you walked by and he was trying to get me to take a picture. And I was like, I can't do that. I cannot mess like this guy.
You should have done it, man. You should have done it, man. That's hilarious. Fresh Corn Grill is fire.
I was going to say, it's funny because that was like right as you were transitioning from college. And like, you know, I'm sure you get noticed and people bug you, but it probably wasn't like,
well, at that point I certainly wasn't.
It would have been really funny if we had done that, but now, because of all your success, I get the Duncan Robinson comparison. I meet people, even last week I met someone, they're like, I went to Michigan, do you know who you look like? And I was like, Duncan Robinson. Yeah, how'd you know? I'm like, all right, well, you know, that's just a credit to your success in the NBA. But the question I wanted to ask was, how did you went undrafted in the 2018 NBA draft, and how did you choose Miami? What was it that went into that decision? Were there other teams you were thinking about? What was the ultimate factor that led you to the Miami Heat?
Yeah, there were a handful of teams. At this point, it was just a summer league opportunity. And that's really what I viewed it as. I wanted to go somewhere where I felt like I was just going to be on the floor in summer league, because that's obviously the most important thing, right?
Hell yeah.
Can't showcase what you're capable of if you're not on the floor. So I felt like Miami would be a good fit, just because, you know, they had expressed a lot of interest. They were actually, you know, Coach Spo actually called me before the draft. He was the only head coach to call me and said, like, look, you know, we don't have a pick. Because that was the other thing too. They didn't have a pick that year, which I thought was going to be really beneficial for me, because it's one or two less people that they're worried about featuring in summer league. Because obviously the draft picks are the guys that they want to take all the shots. So, you know, Coach Spo called me and was like, look, we don't have a pick, but if you don't get drafted, we would love to have you, for summer league. And, you know, he kind of just told me a little bit about the organization. And obviously I knew a lot of what he was saying, but still just to hear it from him, meant a lot. And then, you know, they've had a ton of success with undrafted guys. You know, there's a long history of, you know, them not necessarily playing guys that, you know, they're financially invested in, you know, giving big contracts or playing money, whatever, which tends to be a thing around the NBA. But instead just putting out the guys that are going to help them win and giving opportunities to guys that show up and you know, work and handle their business. So it seemed like a really good fit. And, you know, from summer league day one, the fact they didn't have a pick definitely helped. You know, I played a lot right from the beginning, and I was able to just kind of parlay it into an opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, I know from Vic, you can speak to that experience as well, like being in the summer league and having to deal with, you know, teams. When a team has draft picks, they get kind of priority, right? Like they kind of get the ball more. Yeah. They have a little bit more leeway. I'm not sure, Vic, what
you're the first one to say, and I can say it because I'm in Australia. Summer league is the worst thing, like, as a player. That, like, it, unless you're the guy, like, bro, you're there. for Lord knows how long in Vegas. I can only do Vegas for like 3 days. You know, they purposely put you in the biggest casinos in Vegas just to see, like, you know, just kind of weed the guys out, see who's going to, you know, party, gamble, do all that stuff, who's really going to be locked in. But, I mean, from my experience in Summer League, like, Summer League was invaluable to me because it gave me my first kind of look at everything, right? Like you said, NBA is so much different than college. Like, the speed of the game, the spacing, just kind of like the shots and like analytics of like basketball that comes into the NBA game. And for me, like, the Magic brought, I think, 17, 18 guys on our Summer League roster. So
yeah,
every day was like competition. You know, we were always out there competing against one another, playing. And like, it was like from pre-draft to Summer League, like, definitely was like a huge wake up call for me to just be like, man, this is, it's cutthroat. Like, you know, you either eat or, like, you know, you're left, you know, by the wayside, and there's no one, you know, like college, like, holding your hand saying like, nah, you know, we believe in you. Like, come on, you can do this. Like, this, it really is you being mentally tough and like really willing yourself to do it. So a lot of respect for you, Duncan, going through that, playing well. And then going to the G League and handling business.
Thank you, bro. Yeah, it's you said it, man. It's like somebody told me, like a vet of mine told me, like, if you can get a bucket in Summer League, then you can get a bucket anywhere because people are playing so hard, which is a great thing. Like, people are playing so hard. Everyone's just like, it's chaos. You know what I mean? It's organized chaos to a certain extent. And it's a challenge, man, especially when, you know, people are like, so many guys are like, this is my chance, this is my shot. And the reality is, like, no NBA team, unless you're like a lottery pick or you're a first round pick or whatever, but none of these, nobody playing in Summer League is going to be taking 10-15 you know what I mean? I've heard this analogy being made, and it's the same thing with the G League too. Like, people are thinking that they're submitting applications to like be the CEO. Like, no, you're submitting applications to be the janitor. Like, that's what people are looking for you to do, to come in and just be like, whatever, the end of the bench or what have you, and find a way that way. Like, if people get it all wrong, it's like, yeah, you go for 20 or 30 and Summer League people would, yes, there are examples where like that's translated, but more often than not, it's like, the guy that can prove that he can make shots and defend, or the guy that he can really rebound and guard multiple positions, or you know, take care of the ball and get people involved. Like, it's those types of things that tends to translate more than, you know, just going for 20 or 30.
Just him jacking, tell us about, you know, you spoke to Spoelstra, and now that you've been a part of it for 2-3 years, the Heat kind of Heat culture. Tell us about the Heat culture. Cause, you know, some, you know, it's kind of been seen as kind of like a stand for, you know, NBA culture, like hard work, toughness. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's I will say it's talked a lot about, and it's covered a lot, like, in media and, you know, around the league. But I think it is for good reason. I mean, I think it's something that, as an organization, when you step in from day one, like, you realize how seriously they take it. But it's nothing like crazy or like cultish or anything like that. It's really just about you know, maximizing opportunities. And so much of that is about, you know, showing up, being a professional, you know, being hardworking, like, you know, weight and body fat is a huge thing around here.
I was going to ask. That
checked all the time. Like, yeah, it comes from Coach Riley. It comes from Coach Riley, and that, like, you can't compete. You can't win if you're not in world-class shape. And it's an expectation that they have, and everybody's held accountable to it. And that's one thing I really do appreciate about it. It's not like it's for certain guys, and that's all the way through, not just the weight and body fat, but everything. Like, there's a standard that's expected from everyone. So, and it's uniform, you know what I mean? Like, it cuts across the players, the coaching staff, and everything in between. So, it helps with, like, provide a roadmap, and it doesn't guarantee anything. Like, it doesn't guarantee that we're going to be really good year in and year out or whatever. Obviously it takes talent and players and other things to make that happen. But I think that, you know, we always, like, it's non-negotiable, and that at least it'll give you a chance, right? And that it's setting you up for success. So it's definitely real. Like, you experience it on the day to day, but it's really just about maximizing opportunities. And I think it ties in well, you know, it's kind of like what I've tried to be about, in that, you know, it's not really about kind of like what you've done or whatever, but like, can you help this team win? Like, it's really just bottom line about winning.
I was going to say, I feel like that work ethic, that professionalism probably translated a lot for you guys in the bubble. Cause you're in all this chaos where everything's up in the air. And I imagine if you're in an organization like the one you're describing, you know, they hold you to that standard regardless of what's happening. So you guys probably not much, you were probably still expected to perform, to show up in shape, to do the little things along the way, but you couldn't just like kind of sit on your couch and be like, I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, we definitely viewed going into the bubble that, you know, mentality and mindset was going to be a huge competitive advantage, you know, one way or the other, right? And whether like you see some teams kind of started to split and fray as the bubble season went on. So it's like, what side of that are you going to fall on? And we had a really good group. Like, we had great leadership, and we also had like enough young guys. You know, I think it's different when you have older guys and guys are leaving their families and happy that it becomes a challenge. But I will say, like, even our older guys were super locked in on the task at hand. And, you know, we really just viewed it like a business trip. Like, this is the circumstance, we're here. Like, everybody's in it, and let's go get it done. So it definitely helped us. I think we all viewed that as a competitive advantage and just gave us confidence.
What was that like, making it all the way to the finals and then playing against, you know, my Lakers?
It was a great experience, man. I definitely, you know, look back on my bubble experience and I'm super appreciative. You know, we feel like I grew a lot as a player. We grew a lot as a team, and, you know, we're able to definitely do some pretty special things. Obviously fell short of the ultimate goal, but just to have had that basketball experience, you know, moving forward, I think it, you know, provides a ton of confidence, you know, for that to happen really in my first year, you know, really playing, I think was huge. So, you know, it definitely keeps the motivation high, you know, to get back there. You know, I'm certainly far from satisfied.
Duncan, there are, you know, people, I think you've said this before and it's other articles about it, but just playing for Coach Spoelstra and playing alongside Jimmy Butler, and the confidence they give you to play and play freely. Because I know when you were maybe your first year, or even when you were two-way, Coach Spoelstra would be like, I want you to shoot it. Like, if you're open, shoot the ball. And you could tell just telling the games, like, even in the bubble when I would come watch the games or see the games, you could just tell Jimmy was telling you and a lot of the younger guys, like, if you shoot it, like, you know, we believe in you, we trust you. And as like the guy, you know, on the team, to just have that faith behind you is something special. So how did that help you?
Oh, it's huge, man. It's been everything. You know, to have the confidence, you know, instilled in you from the head coach, obviously the guy putting people in the game. And then also, like you said, the best player, both of which are huge. You know, it just allows you, I mean, you know, like, it's already so hard to play well at this level. And if your mind's cluttered or you're worried about like, oh, this is a good shot, or, you know, should I be shooting this? Like, there's just no way that you can be, you know, effective. So, you know, early on, like I really struggled with that. You know, particularly my first year, like I didn't even understand what was a good shot, you know, like, or what shots I could take. And then I just kind of started to realize it, to just kind of shoot everything. But then I couldn't make anything. So it's like kind of like a process, you know, you figure out what shots to take, then you can't make them, but then you slowly start to figure that out too. So it's been huge just to be able to play freely, like you said, like to be clear in the mind and just go out there and like focus on doing your job and having like a very, very clear description of like what your job is. You know, if I'm not out there, and obviously it's about making shots, but like in a lot of instances, it's just about taking them, you know, like keeping the defense honest. Like, if I'm not taking those shots and I'm not doing my job, and if I'm not doing my job, then there's no reason for me to be on the floor.
I mean, it's incredible to see everything that you have accomplished, you know, so early. And I think it's just a testament to your work ethic and everything we've talked about up until this point. But maybe, you know, you had originally said that basketball or playing professionally or in the NBA wasn't necessarily the goal. You wanted to go to a school where you could create opportunity for yourself and learn and just be, you know, opening doors basically that wouldn't necessarily be open without basketball. Can you speak more to the things that you want to do outside of the game or the things that you're already doing?
Yeah, sure. You know, so I just started a podcast as well. Yep. So, you know, I don't view us as competition. I view it as collaborative. As, you know, we're all in this together.
And what's the name of the podcast, by the way? So you can plug
it's
you.
It's the Long Shot Podcast. Right. But yeah, you know, I've enjoyed doing that just because, it's allowed me to kind of find a voice. You know, I'm not super active on social media, so it's given me like a more, in my opinion, like a more intimate way to really connect and kind of share my story and hopefully, you know, inspire a little bit. And I just enjoy doing it, you know, especially this year with everything going on. It's nice to have something, you know, with all the downtime that we have. So that's been enjoyable. And then in terms of off the court stuff that I'm interested in, you know, like just like anybody, you know, it's nothing crazy. I do enjoy, like, I've gotten particularly into like yoga and Pilates, really Pilates actually. I've always kind of done yoga, but Pilates down in Miami, you know, I've linked up with a really cool instructor down here and she's awesome. So I do a lot of that stuff. And, you know, especially this year, I'm trying to read as much as possible, read and write both, which, you know, is always a challenge. You know, when you got Netflix or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I'll tell you what, Jake, this guy is a professional. He's in Miami. He said his off the court life is nothing special.
That's okay. Well, we'll leave it at that.
Nah, my boys give me a hard time. Like, cause I really, there's different Miamis though. Like when people come down here for a long weekend, they see a totally different Miami. Like I truthfully, I don't even really know that Miami. Like I've done it a couple times and, you know, my friends come into town, but like I keep it super, super low key, which I enjoy. Honestly, it's
you're a professional. Cool. Yeah. He's a professional.
Yeah.
He's not like us in Vegas or me in Vegas. Sleeping on your floor. But no, man, I really appreciate you. I don't know if there's anything else that you want to get across in this episode or any questions you have for us, but I don't want to take up more of your time.
No, I'm all good, man. I really appreciate you guys having me on, and you know, it's cool stuff. I love the Bristol Studio stuff. I've been tuned in.
Appreciate you. Appreciate that. But yeah, man. If you're ever in LA, you're welcome to come by the studio. We'll show you what we've got going on.
Go ahead. You know, we got to ask the Mount Rushmore question.
My bad.
Duncan, give us your Mount Rushmore basketball, man. We won't. Jake going to give you a bias. Any?
I'm not gonna. I'm not gonna answer. I'm not gonna say anything.
Give us your Mount Rushmore basketball.
So is.
And I'm just. I'm also gonna say Last Dance did come out a year ago. So go ahead and give us your Mount Rushmore.
So are you? Are we saying like my Mount Rushmore, or like who I think are the best?
You can do both.
See, it's a distinction.
Who do you think are the best top four all time? And who are your top four? Like, who are your favorite?
Oh, I'm just going to blend it into one.
Okay.
My Mount Rushmore, I mean, I'm going to go, so you can't be, it can't be a current player. I'm going to start off by saying that.
Okay.
So I'm going to say no current players. Got to be retired. So I got Mike, obviously, on there. You know, I grew up in Boston, around Boston. So I got Larry Bird in there. I mean, I think Kareem's got to be on there as well.
Okay.
And then this is kind of a different take, but this is where the, you know, I make it unique to myself. Like I grew up a huge Iverson fan, so I'll throw Iverson on there as well.
Nothing wrong with that.
Respectable. Yeah.
I think also
it's a good list.
That would be like a dynamic four, right? Like if they were to ever play together, like I think that those four could work.
Who would be the fifth one to work with them? Round out your starting five.
Yeah, I would say I'd let Iverson play off the ball, and I'd go Magic, you know. Really let Iverson, you know, play the two and lean into that. You know, Jordan at the three, we're playing Bird at the small ball four, and we got Kareem at the five. It's dangerous.
Team. That's a team.
Nah, I like it. That's like a respectable I'd know basketball. You know, I respect the older generation. Rushmore.
Yeah, no current players. You know, I can't put people on there that, you know, I'm
playing guys every day.
Yeah. I can't do that.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much, and good luck the rest of the way, and hope to have you back on in the future.
Yeah, would love to, man. That would be fun. All right, appreciate you guys. Man.
Appreciate Take you. Dude.
Have a good one, guys. Get you some sleep, both of you guys. My bad.
This podcast is presented by Bristol Studio. Sound editing by Rashad Allen. Music by James Grissom.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.